Welcome to the Check Your Head podcast, the podcast where notable musicians and experts share their stories and solutions for mental health and wellness. I'm your host, Mari Fong, a music journalist and life coach for musicians, and today I'm starting with some exciting news. The Check Your Head podcast has been nominated for a People's Choice Award for the 2021 Podcast Awards, a very prestigious honor. So a huge thank you to all of our loyal listeners. It really feels good to know that you enjoy the podcast as we also create some positive change as well. Now for today's featured guests. This married rock duo is made up of vocalist and drummer Anna Kevorkian and her husband, guitarist Shant Sulahian, who write rock music with a purpose, to speak out on issues such as the conflict in Armenia with their song Antibody, and songs like Empath that encourage others with their mental health, both songs off their upcoming debut album, Fear Tactics. You'll also hear a clip of their single Empath later in our episode. Satellite City's album release show will be at the Troubadour this Saturday, September 4th, 2021 in Los Angeles, which will also benefit mental health for musicians, with the band kindly donating a portion of their ticket sales to Sweet Relief Musicians Fund and the Check Your Head podcast. So come enjoy the show with us safely, and when you buy two tickets to the show at troubadour.com, bring your ticket receipt to the merch booth for a free Satellite City t-shirt. Shant and Anna of Satellite City will share their solutions for living with two different types of anxiety. Shant with obsessive compulsive disorder or OCD, and Anna with premenstrual dysphoric disorder or PMDD. Next, I'll interview OCD expert and therapist Chris Tronson, who not only treats OCD patients, but also had severe OCD before finally finding the therapy that literally saved his life. Now Chris is an advocate and national speaker for OCD and leader at OCD Southern California, an affiliate of the International OCD Foundation. But first, let's hear Anna and Shant of Satellite City share their story.
Empath, which was our most recent single, I felt that song tied the whole record together, and lyrically that was focused the most on mental health. So yeah, I kind of just wanted a similar theme for the album title as well.
Yeah, I really love the lyrics. In fact, you have a lyric in the chorus that says, "There's nothing left to do but break the wall off your fence. Open yourself to the truth. Don't throw away all of you." I was wondering if you can explain the message behind those lyrics.
Basically, it's better to express what you're going through, because if you keep it in, that kind of eats away at you little by little. And whether it's talking to family, friends, or getting professional help, I think talking about it is the first step, so it doesn't eat you up every day. And that would be throwing away all of you, because you're keeping it in so much, and eventually it's going to take a toll on you.
It's like embracing all the things that you feel insecure about or that are weighing you down, and just being honest with yourself and overcoming that by talking about it, by getting help, and stop putting up a defense, like the walls. Just be open with yourself and don't give up on yourself. That's probably the main message there.
That was our message for that song. Taking the first step and being proactive is essential.
Yeah, it takes a lot of bravery to really speak out. But one thing I really liked is you said, don't throw away all of you. And I do think that sometimes, whether it's a musician or someone we know, they may be struggling with something that they don't understand. And instead of going for help or going through all the steps that take work, they may end up hurting themselves, you know, losing their life because they want to throw away all of themselves. So I think it's a really important lyric.
Thank you.
But I was reading, Shant, that you were diagnosed with OCD, which is obsessive compulsive disorder. Can you tell me when you first started noticing the symptoms?
Yeah, I can tell you exactly when I first started noticing. It was September, and it was five years ago, September. Yeah, I just didn't understand for a very long time what was happening. And OCD is something that is different for everyone. What the the average person might know of OCD is germophobic, but there's so much more to that condition. OCD can be repeating images, repeating phrases in your mind, or it could be repeating compulsions that have nothing to do with images or phrases. And for me, it started with images in my mind. And I didn't understand what was going on. My heart was racing all the time. I thought it was just anxiety. I just had no concept of what it was. And it took me quite some time. Actually, last year was the first time I saw a therapist that used science-based therapy to diagnose me and to help treat my OCD. So yeah, it took me four years to figure that out. Because of a plethora of reasons. Number one, being Armenian, in my culture, you don't talk much about mental health. You just get the whole like tough love and kind of brush off your shoulders and get up and try to figure it out yourself. And that doesn't work with everyone. It really doesn't. My family was supportive. I'm not going to lie. My parents definitely wanted to help me, but coming from their own background, they didn't know much about mental health either. So it was hard for them to show the kind of support that I needed because they didn't want me to go ahead and rush off to a therapist because to them it might have showed weakness. But eventually I decided I needed to see one because the pandemic and quarantine was the last straw. And I did. And since then, I've definitely had an upward slope.
Now, you're both married to each other. And Anna, I'm wondering, how did the OCD symptoms affect your relationship?
We didn't really know what it was. And we just thought it was just a really heightened form of anxiety. And he's actually really awesome where it didn't affect our relationship in a negative way. But also, he keeps things in a lot. So I had to really pull information out of him and figure out what was going on. And our generation growing up with the internet, we always researched, oh, why does my left arm feel weird when I lie down this way or something like that. So he was doing research and he stumbled upon the OCD thing. And I think that's when I started researching too. And we both got super into it. And then he had to teach me how the treatment that he did, which was exposure response, like how I would be supportive of that. So if he was dealing with something, I know how to respond to it, because for OCD, it's different, like positive thinking and reinforcing things and making myself feel more calm helps me. But for OCD, you're actually supposed to really lean into that fear that you're having and expose yourself to it. So I had to learn how to respond to him when he was dealing with something. Instead of like making him feel better, I had to respond in the correct way, have him deal with the problem then and there, because Definitely putting a Band-Aid over something like that does not work.
Exposure response prevention is the main therapy that I have undergone. And the main thing that has helped me tremendously, just an example for listeners who don't know what that is. For example, let's say I'll be hanging out in a park and I am having this fear that this tree is like wobbling and it's going to fall on me. I'm going to have to sit by that tree and tell myself this tree is going to fall on me. It's going to crush me. I'm going to die. And I have to sit there in my discomfort and wallow in this discomfort and just repeat that to myself, that this tree's going to follow me, I'm going to die, and be okay with that. And that's the only way the symptoms of OCD start to decrease.
Really? So it's like accepting your greatest fear of what's happening in the moment.
And I wouldn't say that's the only way your symptoms decrease, but it has an 80% success rate.
I was reading about that, and it's supposed to be one of the top ways, which is part of cognitive behavioral therapy, but to combat the thoughts that go with OCD. And so each time you have a worry like that, you have to lean into it.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And how long, let's say, if you were sitting by that tree, when is the time that you can step away from it? Is it when the anxiety starts to decrease, or is it having to repeat that over and over?
I think just repeating it over and over is the goal there. You can even step away from it and still have the fear that the tree or a tree in the future will fall on you and you're going to die. But leaning into that and exposing yourself to it repeatedly is when you'll slowly start to see your symptoms decrease.
Okay, so is that basically showing you that even if you have the greatest fear that, and it doesn't happen, mm-hmm. that eventually you start to learn, you know, I have this thought, but it doesn't mean that it will happen.
Exactly. You start to be okay with the thought in your head, and that thought doesn't cause panic or fear anymore. The thought might not go away, but you're okay with the thought. So being okay with the thought will allow your brain to shift into something else that you care about.
Mm. You were living with this for years before mm-hmm. you got this therapy. What were other things that you tried to mitigate those thoughts or help yourself with OCD? Because a lot of people have trial and error. You know, what are some things 100%. That didn't work?
So things that didn't work was straight on avoiding the thought. If you try forcefully to avoid it and you have OCD, it is bound to come back and get you. Even in casual conversation, it'll be in the back of your brain because you're ignoring it so hard. Your brain is telling you, you can't ignore this. It's right here. You got to address it right now. So that took me a while because I didn't understand the whole science behind that until a professional explained it to me. But you can't ignore it. And also one thing I learned is doing exposure response therapy, you need to be in a kind of a calm state. And usually what a professional would recommend, again, I'm not a therapist, is either medication or exercising, working out. So you're in that calm state before you do that therapy, because only then you'll have the skills to accept the thought and lean into it. And for it not to scare you to that high degree that you were scared before, if that makes sense.
Mm. So what are things that you do to get yourself in that calm state? Because I know there's a lot of different things you could do, right? You said exercise, meditation, breathing. What is it that you do to get yourself in that state?
The number one thing that goes hand in hand with my therapy is working out, honestly. And I probably don't work out as much as I should. I do 3 to 4 times a week, but I do cardio and strength training, and that has helped me exponentially. Also, I realized that hanging out with friends, especially during the pandemic, that definitely got my mind off things and relaxed me.
Safely, keeping a distance.
Seeing people, because during that time, not seeing anyone, that was when I was going through my toughest period.
We got married during the pandemic.
Yeah, we got married exactly a year ago. It was our anniversary 2 days ago, our 1 year anniversary.
Oh, congratulations. That's exciting.
Thank you. Yeah, and like 3 months after mm-hmm. is when a friend of ours, he told Sean about his treatment, and he has OCD.
Right.
And that's when you started treatment. So a lot of that stuff definitely. But
yeah, I think
that demotivated us too, because normally we're part of a community, like there's a gym we would always go to and everyone knows each other. And that really motivated us to be on top of our health, eat good, work out. And I think
not having those small things, it just took a toll. You know, I'm sure it took a toll on everyone, but people with underlying mental conditions, they had it the worst, I assume.
Yeah, I do think so. Especially in the music industry where touring stopped, everything came to a halt. And even now, there's a lot of people, you know, in music that don't know what's going to happen next. But Anna, you mentioned that Sean came across a friend that also had OCD. Was that the turning point where you said, I want to get professional help, or was it something else?
Right. So the problem was I had seen a therapist in the past, but they didn't use exposure response. They didn't give me homework. So I was hesitant on professional help because my experience wasn't great. And I'm not going to lie.
They didn't say you have OCD.
Right. They didn't say I have OCD.
They just told them you had anxiety.
They just thought it was anxiety. And I saw three therapists, and none of them were using exposure response, and all of them were the same way. And I just didn't have the best experience with them. So when my friend called me, he said, this is a totally different thing. This is science-based therapy. They tell you how many treatments you need. It's not like you're going and you don't know when you're going to stop going. They tell you, all right, you need between 12 to 22 sessions, and then you're done. And then there's a relapse prevention program. So it's all thought out, and it's really organized. It was actually, it's the UCLA OCD clinic. And I highly recommend for people struggling with OCD to check that out.
But you know what's interesting is I think now that we know what OCD is, we've had other people in our life tell us they have it. And it's crazy how common it actually is.
So many people came out of the woodworks like, I have it too.
Oh, I actually did exposure response, and that's what helped me. And one of our friends was doing it too back in the day, and we thought like his thing was so different from yours.
Right, right.
But it was just a subsection of OCD. And
starting exposure response prevention is a challenging task, because if a professional doesn't describe to you how to go about it, it can be extremely triggering and it can exasperate your symptoms. So again, it goes back to being proactive and taking that first step and understanding how important it is to trust a science-based therapist, a professional who can get you to take that first step with them.
And to find a therapist that specializes in OCD and is familiar with these kind of therapies, mm-hmm. because you're right, but sometimes it takes two or three therapists to find the right person. But once you know what you have, you can really focus on cutting that down by trying to find a specialist, that focuses
definitely.
On it. Right. Mm-hmm. Now, Anna, you said that you also live with anxiety. How has anxiety shown up in your life?
For me, it definitely comes in waves. And I feel like it gets exasperated when I'm PMSing. There's no way of really telling someone they have PMDD, but I was told that I have PMDD, which comes during my time of PMS. It comes with depression and anxiety at really high levels. And it's pretty scary when it was happening. And then I started realizing it was only happening during a certain time of the month. And I was like, okay, this is strange. But honestly, exercising a lot has really helped me. I do Muay Thai, so that helps me a lot, just getting all that out. And diet is such a big part of it, especially for women. Diet and exercise can change so much, and also herbal supplements that I take. I did so much research on my end because I feel like there's very little information on that. And when you go see someone for it, like a gynecologist, they want to run tests on you and see how it will work. Because it's weird, because it's mental, but it's also something that your body is going through.
What are some of the herbal supplements you take? And can you also tell us what the acronym PMDD stands for?
PMDD stands for premenstrual dysphoric disorder. It's basically PMS on a very severe level. And for me, it's more of the mood stuff that happens with PMS versus the other stuff. The herbal supplements that have helped me, I found this company, it's called Flow. And they use this herb called Dong Quai, and that mixed with a chasseberry, and there's like B vitamins in there. Honestly, when I stopped taking it for a while, I started feeling weird again. And then Sean would be like, hey, did you forget to take your vitamins this month? And I'd be like, oh my God, I totally did. And then vitamin D and fish oil and magnesium are also really good, but that's good for mental health in general. Yeah, we're super big on our vitamins.
Yeah, staying on top of stuff like this, like the small things, like it goes a long way, and it really helps us both.
Well, it's amazing if you have a deficiency with a certain vitamin, how it could affect you physically and mentally. I did a test to see what I was deficient in. You know, I was vitamin D, it was B vitamins, and also things that I was allergic to. So, you know, it does make a difference. And I've also found that I was triggered hormonally with my depression and anxiety, also during hormonal changes. In fact, that's how I started the podcast, because I was going through hormonal changes and it triggered a major depression. And there was nothing else going on in my life, so I knew it was something physical that was happening. But it's really important to talk about, because there are quite a few physical things that can cause you to react mentally, you know, and affect your behavior. But one thing, I was reading up on OCD, and Sean, it says there's four different categories in general. Like the first one is cleaning and contamination, as far as symptoms go. The second is symmetry and order. The third is unacceptable or taboo thoughts. And the fourth is doubt and harm. Do you feel like your symptoms fell into one of those four categories?
My symptoms fell into all of those categories because I didn't know what I had. So there was such a high level of fear in me that my symptoms kept changing. And it would be thoughts from all over the place. And to even add on to those categories, there's like a bunch of subcategories of OCD as well. It can go from religious, existential. So yeah, I had a variety of all of those categories. There's something called pure O. It's a subcategory of OCD that is strictly obsessions without the compulsions. However, you can still have mental compulsions with pure O. For example, if I was having OCD and I was having a bunch of intrusive thoughts, I would try to force myself to think of another thought to mask out the intrusive thoughts. And that itself is a compulsion. But it still falls into the category of pure O. I think some people might see me and say, he doesn't have OCD. He doesn't go and check the doorknob every 2 seconds, or he doesn't check if the stove is on, you know. But I don't think people are 100% educated on what OCD fully means, and that's why they think that. But yeah, there's a ton of subcategories and a ton of thoughts that I had until I understood how to lean into those.
So you talked a lot about ERP. Mm-hmm. Were there any medications that you tried for OCD, and did any of those work?
I was recommended medication. I chose not to go that route, but honestly, to each their own. I definitely think the mixture of medication and therapy or exercise and therapy works for different people. Some people might prefer the medication, which is totally fine. But I think being in that relaxed state and then doing the therapy, that's the key. And whether medication helps you with that or working out or yoga, I feel like you should just try those options and then take your pick on what helps you the most.
I can totally see where if you don't even have the motivation or support from people to really work on yourself, I feel like medication is definitely a great option.
100%.
To help you
100%.
Get your stuff back in order.
Definitely.
And sometimes while we're trying to find our solutions that work for us, sometimes musicians can self-medicate. They can try drugs or alcohol or something else that can have addictive qualities. Mm-hmm. So have you, Anna, ever done something like that to try and soothe your anxiety? And the same for you, Sean, with your OCD?
I think both of us definitely drink on occasion.
But I'll have the thought like, oh my God, I like the feeling of being drunk. What if I become an alcoholic? You know, that's an average OCD thought right there. Mm-hmm. You know, so with alcohol, it's not good for you in the first place. So I just try to stay away from it as much as possible.
And I think by him doing that, it's made me not really want to drink much. Thankfully, we haven't had a problem with addiction. That's obviously
a big problem for musicians in the industry.
Yeah.
I have tried CBD oil for when I was having really bad OCD. This was before my therapy. I thought it would just help me calm down, and totally the opposite. I had like a month-long panic attack from one experience.
Oh my gosh.
There was THC in the oil as well, and like, it was a disaster. I think I just freaked out. That's a story for another day.
You know, I wanted to get to your song, Empath. And would either of you consider yourselves empaths?
Yeah, 100%. I think both of us. I think that's why we wrote the song, because we were too much of that. There needs to be a healthy balance of being empathetic towards others. Personally, I was at an unhealthy level of being empathetic towards other people's emotions. So I wanted to learn how to distance myself from that.
I feel like I'm an empath. And I'm wondering, from your perspective, what do you feel the dangers are of being an empath?
Something my mom used to say, because she noticed that in me, even when I was a kid, like if I saw someone else's life, it really got to me and I would put it on myself. And she would tell me this. It's also like a very Armenian mom thing to say. She would say, don't feel too sorry for others, because then they'll start feeling sorry for you, because it puts such a weight on you, especially as a kid too. I wanted to help everyone's problems. There's definitely finding that balance of being there for someone, helping them out, but also not letting that affect your life and affect your health and well-being, because then you can't be there for that person when you're starting to feel.
And understanding that you're not always in control, and that's okay. And that's okay. I think it helps you be a lower level of an empath.
Empaths are here to help people and to help heal them. But thank you so much for Empath. It covers the five stages of grief, which is denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And I'm wondering what experience in your own life reminds you of going through those stages of grief.
I think a big one that hit me hard during this pandemic is my sister got COVID and she got really sick, and we weren't really thinking it would affect her the way that it did. She's 40, so she's not like in that age group where you think, damn, I don't know if she's going to make it. So thankfully, she was able to fight through it, and she had two strokes in the process of that. So now she's in recovery and she's walking again, which is awesome, but she's still working on regaining all of her mobility. And sorry, I'm getting emotional. But I think for my whole family and even like Sean, everyone around us, it was hard to accept that for a long time. Accepting it and helping be there for her. And,
right. And I love the fact that everyone was proactive and positive around her. I feel like that helped her in her recovery, and she's still recovering, but we see her progress on a month-to-month basis, and it's staggering from my perspective, from where she was to where she is now. Also, we didn't touch much about positive energy, but I'm a big believer in that, you know, staying positive and positive talk, not just self-talk, reciprocating that with someone else and giving off the positive vibes, it goes a long way for sure.
Yeah, it does. And Anna, my heart goes out to you and your sister. I'm glad that she's getting better. I know that COVID really hit hard with the Armenian community. Culturally, you would be able to speak to this better than I would.
Sure. Definitely. Yeah, I mean, so many people we know had it. Few people we know lost parents, so we saw it almost everywhere. But yeah, in our Armenian community, we saw it happen. It's just,
it was devastating.
Yeah,
it was devastating that some people weren't taking it as seriously, while others were taking it so seriously, and we're trying to convey to them, not just the Armenian community, just everyone around us, trying to convey to them how serious this thing is.
Yeah, I think we were both very serious about it. And our families were as well.
And this thing hit people differently. Whoever had COVID, they experienced it differently. And we still don't understand it. And that was the freaky part.
Yes, it's exciting to have the vaccine out as well. She got the vaccine too. And that was another fear I kept having is, okay, she's better now, but after a few months, you know, she can get it again. The vaccine was definitely,
we're super grateful
that
for that.
Calm my anxiety, us being vaccinated, just all of that made me feel better, because my fear was always there's definitely a chance of me getting it and getting super sick. But being an empath, I care more about the people around me and not wanting to get them sick. I was like an anxious mess during this whole thing.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I think the vaccine just calmed me down a lot.
Yeah. And we were able to do band stuff after that, you know, not doing anything with the band for so long was like, oh my God.
All that really demotivated us. I'd like stopped playing drums and I just started playing again a few months ago. And it's like, and I was like, oh my God, this is the happiest I've been in a year.
We just booked our first show in a year and a half. So that feels good. That's going to be September 4th at the Troubadour.
Awesome. The vaccine has given us that extra layer of protection. And I'm vaccinated. We're appreciative that we have the ability to get the vaccine in this country. But also, live music is starting to come back. What are you looking forward to with touring or with music in general?
So I think now, being cooped in and not having those opportunities to go out and do things, people are going to want to do more things. Like, were you the one that was like, I'm excited to go to the DMV or something?
Yeah, it's just going anywhere. Seeing a human face to face, it feels nice. Like, humans need that.
And I got to hug my niece for the first time in a year and a half. And it just felt so good. And just to see people's smiling faces behind the mask. I know those little things, we just now appreciate them so much more. And one thing that you've done, which I really appreciate, is you've donated part of the proceeds for t-shirts to different nonprofits like NAMI. And I think you had another one.
For antibody, for those shirts, when we released that, we donated to Armenia Fund. Since Armenia was going through a very serious war at the time, it was November of 2020. And now for Empath, we'll be donating 15% of the Empath t-shirt design, the t-shirts itself, to NAMI.
Oh, very good. Mm-hmm. The Check Your Head podcast is now partnered with Sweet Relief Musicians Fund, which is a 501c3 nonprofit. And maybe in the future, you can do a benefit show or something.
Oh, we would love that. We would definitely love to do that, for sure.
Yeah, that would be amazing. You know, I have one more question, because I think it's important for people to know how your life has changed after you've gone through therapy and after you've gotten your OCD and your anxiety at a low level.
Definitely more of a clear head on a day-to-day. You know, that doesn't mean I don't have OCD. I'm at a lower level of OCD. I still have the symptoms. And when I get stressed out, it definitely gets exasperated. But leaning into it, when the thought comes, that's the key. And that can help you do what you want to do on a day-to-day without getting annoyed by these lingering thoughts. So taking the first step to see professional help is important. It has potential to change your life. And I'm not exaggerating. I urge anyone listening to do so if they're struggling.
Next, we have an expert who suffered with severe obsessive compulsive disorder before finding the therapy that saved his life. OCD expert and advocate Chris Tronson will share his knowledge of OCD and the therapy that has an overwhelming success rate for this disorder. Chris is a registered marriage and family therapist and now speaks nationwide on OCD. Now let's hear Chris Tronson share his solutions.
I read your story, which, first of all, is an incredible story. But one thing that really struck me was that it took a long time before you got diagnosed. And there's also misconceptions about OCD. What do you think is the greatest misconception about this condition?
We know, based on evidence, that the average person who receives treatment for obsessive compulsive disorder, it took them about 14 to 17 years after their first symptom to get help. That's a long time of struggling with this disorder. And like that statistic, when I started showing symptoms as a child, I didn't receive treatment until my early 20s. So it took me many years, like most people. And I do believe that the misconceptions of OCD is the reason why it took me so long. Some of the main things I hear is that it's a personality quirk. It's something people wish they had because they'd keep their house clean. Oh, all people with OCD right now must be loving the pandemic because they get to wipe things down. So I think the misconception is it's all around contamination and germs. Maybe the second category people know is, checking things like the stove or leaving the iron on and liking to organize the desk. But the biggest misconception is that people enjoy doing these things. it's not keeping your hands clean. It's literally taking hours upon hours of showers, cleaning your house, bleaching things, not seeing other people or letting other people into your space. But there's also all these different subtypes of OCD, including taboo, intrusive harm, sexual deviant thoughts that people don't want. So there's such a larger world of obsessive compulsive disorder that people just don't know about. And I believe that's a big contributing factor to why it takes people so many years to learn that they not only have it, but to also get the proper diagnosis and then eventually get the proper treatment.
Well, the other thing is that, like with your story, you actually suffered so much that you almost lost your life to it. So it's not just this quirky condition, but it's something where people really suffer and they can not even leave their house because of all the time that it takes to try and quell these fears. But let's start first with, what are some of the symptoms of OCD?
So the main criteria of having OCD is the O stands for obsession. So that's where people are having intrusive thoughts, intrusive feelings, urges, images. There's something that's coming into their life, mainly through thoughts. It can be feelings, sensations that are absolutely unwanted and intrusive. And because that person has such an unpleasant experience with those worries and fears, they do some kind of physical or mental act to try to make those thoughts or feelings go away. For instance, somebody who has a fear that they may have hit somebody with their car, which is known as hit and run OCD. Somebody may be driving around the block multiple times or checking their car for any damage with the fear that they potentially hurt someone. With mental acts, people may try to distract themselves or push away thoughts or replace a bad thought with a good thought or a bad image with a good image. So once somebody has those obsessions and responds with a compulsion, it becomes cyclical. And pretty soon over time, the person is having thoughts, they do those compulsions, they get temporary relief, but unfortunately they've reinforced that this issue is a problem and they find themselves not being able to get out of that cycle. Then the D in OCD stands for disorder. So that means that people are spending more than an hour a day on this disorder. Often when somebody's severe, it can be greater than 8 hours a day. In my own story, you know, I was spending 16 hours a day. That's why I didn't leave the house for 3 years of my life, is because you're spending 16 hours a day consumed with these behaviors, both mental and physical. Now, when it comes to subtypes, that's what makes OCD hard to identify, is because the subtypes people aren't hearing about. We know contamination. So that's going to be the fear of germs, illness, sickness, since people go into great lengths to keep themselves safe. So that might be lengthy showers, repeated showers, hand washing, cleaning, wiping items down. We also have checking. So that can be where somebody has a fear that they've left a stove on or they've left their car running in the garage and they go to check it to make sure. And then we have symmetry, where people have to keep things organized or in line. But those are sort of the ones people already know about. So now we jump into harm OCD. That's where somebody has the fear that they may hurt another person or hurt themselves. Now, when people hear that, people sometimes get scared. Wait, there's people out there that have these harm urges and thoughts. But the difference is somebody with OCD is so disturbed by those thoughts that they spend hours and hours a day to try to get rid of those thoughts, rid of those feelings. People will go to great lengths to remove all the knives from their house. They might not have children because they're afraid that they might accidentally harm their child. Or they're repeatedly checking themselves into a hospital because they fear that they're going to intentionally or accidentally harm themselves. We have scrupulosity. That's centered around religion. So people have the fear of going to hell or doing something in sin. We also have sexual intrusive thoughts, where somebody has thoughts or images around having sex with a minor or with a family member or with a pet. And once again, people may hear that and think, wow, that person must be disturbed. But once again, these people are good people who have great hearts. But the problem is they're having these opposite kind of fears and actions. And it makes the person so uncomfortable that they try to push it away. There's even a relationship OCD where the person consistently questions, is this relationship something they want to be in? It has somebody who's madly in love with their wife question the relationship even as they're walking down the aisle. We have what's called magical thinking, and that's where people feel an urge to perform an act in order to prevent something bad from happening. For instance, you know, for my own story, I felt like I had to wake up every day at 9:45. If I woke up before or after, I felt something bad would happen to my mom. Now, hearing that doesn't make a lot of sense. We have sexual orientation OCD, where somebody who's heterosexual and happy in a relationship is getting intrusive thoughts that they may potentially be interested in someone of the same sex. And with all these subtypes, it's absolutely the opposite of what that individual wants. And so they're fighting constantly in their own head, their own body. So there's all these different painful subtypes that individuals struggle with. And that's why there's so many people going untreated and undiagnosed, because most of the time people don't know that any of these other subtypes exist.
The OCD sounds really individualized as far as the fears and the thoughts that are going through your head. And I know when I was in a very bad depression and anxiety period that I had thoughts that I would not normally think of. And these thoughts scared me. So all of these things, logically, you know, are not going to happen, but they feel very real when you're in it.
Absolutely. And when we've looked at scans, when somebody's going through intrusive thoughts, the brain is lit up. I mean, all the centers, especially that frontal cortex where our fear center lies, those things are lit up. So even if this person isn't in danger, their brain is lighting up. And it's not just the brain, it's the body. You know, people start to notice that they feel physiological symptoms. Their throat is getting dry, their heart's pounding fast, their blood is being pumped, the cortisol levels are going up. So even if that person rationally knows that nothing is wrong, their body and their brain is kind of going off, even though nothing's wrong. So the person feels inclined to get back to that safety zone. And as somebody who's lived through it, now after treatment, I can look back and say, why was I afraid of all those things happening? They never did. But in the moment, if you would have talked to me, I literally felt it was life or death multiple hours a day.
Right. And then all of that cortisol and adrenaline that's going through your body for all that time is really bad for your body, right? Just the chemicals that shouldn't be there are there, and it totally wears down on your body and your mind.
Correct. Right? I mean, this is supposed to be temporary. What somebody with OCD goes through, which makes it such a unique disorder, is the person isn't going through a temporary once a week moment of panic. This individual could be going through stressful situations 10 times an hour. Like when I was at my most severe, 16 hours a day, I was going up and down, fight or flight. Your body isn't meant to have that happen. And it's draining. It burns you out. It makes you exhausted. That wears on your immune system. You're not supposed to have cortisol and adrenaline, norepinephrine, et cetera, pumping all day throughout. And so that's why people get very weak and sick when they're going through years and years of stress. And if it goes untreated for a very long time, like if I see a client who's in their 60s, 70s, 80s, they're having health issues that is strictly from the untreated obsessive compulsive disorder and the stress and havoc it puts on someone's body.
Do you find that OCD runs in families, or is there specific causes for OCD?
Well, OCD definitely falls more on the genetic ends. So often with my clients, people in their families have shown signs and symptoms of OCD. I know in my own family, my dad has showed health OCD. My grandfather was a hoarder, which hoarding disorder falls under OCD, and depression in my family, anxiety as well. So it's not abnormal at all. You know, there can sometimes be an environmental factor. So we notice that some people, their OCD may have been mild or unnoticed, and then they have a death in the family or a really tragic event. And it's like the floodgates broke down and now everything comes to a head. But all of the research is in agreement that it's not that it caused them to develop the OCD. It's just that the OCD became more prominent once the loss of control and the difficult time happened. But it's definitely genetic and passed down generation to generation, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, I think that's important to note, because sometimes when people have mood disorders, they blame themselves, or they feel like, you know, I did this, or, you know, what's wrong with me? And oftentimes it's could be something that is part of our DNA. Now, one thing that Shant talked about was exposure and response therapy, and it stands for ERP. Can you tell me about that? And is that the main type of therapy that's used for OCD?
So yes, ERP, which is exposure response prevention therapy, the type of therapy, it is absolutely the gold standard therapy for OCD. And what gold standard means is it's evidence-based, it's been researched, it's scientific, it's been shown through studies for many years now, since the 70s, proven to be the gold standard treatment for OCD. So what I always tell people when they're looking for treatment is you have to make sure your therapist not only does ERP, but knows it well. But like many people, unfortunately, the first therapists we see often don't know ERP, and we go to talk therapy or some other type of treatment, and it doesn't change behavior through talking. And that's what makes ERP different. It's a very behavioral treatment. The E stands for exposure. So it's putting yourself in a stressful situation. Response prevention comes in, all those physical and mental compulsions we talked about, we're asking to reduce and then eliminate them. So for my own treatment, for instance, I lived with my grandma and my younger sister, and I would get a lot of intrusive thoughts about harming them. And I love them. I mean, they were my favorite people in the world. And I know the reason I'd get thoughts about them is because they were very fragile. You know, my little sister was very young, my grandma was very old. And so before treatment, I would just avoid them. I was so worried about hurting them that I'd only be in the room with them if other people were there, or I'd avoid them all together. And I used to cry myself to sleep because I wanted to spend time with them, but I was so afraid based off the urges. So once I got treatment to finally find a specialist in ERP, so the exposure for me was to spend time alone with my grandmother, spend time alone with my younger sister. Now the feelings would get very loud because I was around them. You know, oh, this is going to be it. You're going to harm them. And we think that we should reassure ourselves or talk back to the OCD or calm ourselves down and say, no, I'd never do that. But the problem is the reassurance just made it louder. The more I tried to push it away, the more I resist, the more it persists. So instead, you have to just tolerate and sort of accept that maybe I will. Let's see. Why sitting with my grandma, if the thought came up, I let it sit there. When the urge came up, I was like, yeah, let's see. Well, of course, what started happening is nothing happened, never harmed them. In fact, I started to spend more time with them. And over time, the thoughts and the feelings subsided. And I was able to hang out with them without any stress. So exposure response prevention is challenging. It has somebody face their fears and live with uncertainty that those fears can happen. But by putting yourself in that and proving it, that's what changes behavior. And ultimately, we want people to live a life. We want people to spend time with their grandma and their sister. We want people to travel. We want people to go back to church or whatever they're avoiding because of the OCD.
I think it's really important that you bring up that you don't try to quiet your fears, because I know in other types of CBT, you try to replace the thought with something else. But in this case, you kind of lean into your fear. And the more you do your fear, the more you're able to see that no harm is being done, and that quells the anxiety. Is that true?
Absolutely. I mean, I want to first say that CBT is an amazing type of treatment. It's absolutely wonderful. I've been trained in it, and it's incredible for other disorders. That's what makes OCD so unique, is ERP is actually a type of CBT. The difference is just what you said. I mean, if somebody's dealing with traditional generalized anxiety disorder, they're going to replace or challenge some of those absolutely distorted thoughts. But in OCD, those thoughts are coming at you a mile a minute. So if you were to sit there and try to replace a bad thought, you're going to get a new bad thought 5 minutes later. And pretty soon, you're spending 16 hours a day chasing these thoughts around. So we actually lean into it. We actually learn that no danger occurs. And we teach ourselves that our brain unfortunately puts something in the dangerous category that we can move over to the safe category. And that's why somebody who used to be afraid of driving or going to church or being around children or whatever their fear is around, as soon as they learn that nothing bad will happen, they relax, they get more comfortable, and pretty soon they can go back to the activity that was taken away. But yes, the learning happens. And that's why people, if they do treatment right, don't have a relapse 5 days later, is because learning occurred. Your brain has neuroplasticity and the ability to change because of learning. And in my own case, all the things that I had feared, I conquered. I overcame. I went back to being around people, my family, and I had learned so much from the treatment that old things that freaked me out, like become housebound, attempt suicide, be at the lowest point in my life. My life was no longer like that after the treatment. It really, really works. It's an extremely effective treatment.
You know, Sean did a lot of research on his OCD, and he said that ERP actually has about an 80% success rate. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, it has extremely high success rate. There was a meta-analysis of a bunch of studies from different research that showed that it can be 76 to 86% effective.
Can you tell me about your life now and how different it is compared to when you were at your lowest point with OCD?
Absolutely. I mean, my lowest point was bad. I spent about 3 years in my house. I didn't leave. I was living alone with a roommate. And so I was burning my savings, wasn't working. I'd leave my house Sundays to a 24-hour grocery store to buy enough supplies for the week. Disconnected with my family, my friends. I mean, I had went from being an athlete and passionate about music and life and just being really happy to completely a shell of myself, and was housebound, attempted suicide, was hospitalized, and everything fell apart for me. But after the treatment of getting my life back, I started to pursue my passion. So I've come full circle. I loved so much becoming an advocate. That was my first stop on my recovery journey. And I was able to speak to different hospitals, and I was on, you know, national TV shows. And I loved that. But everybody would reach out and be like, your story is so inspirational, help me. And I'm like, but I can't, I'm not a therapist. And I felt something was missing. So I started going back to school and eventually was able to become a therapist. And now I treat OCD and related disorders. But I've just really been dedicating my life to making sure that people don't suffer as long as I did and get that treatment a lot sooner. I have a great relationship with family now and friends and date. I mean, the pandemic hasn't been great, but other than that, just really, really living a full life. And that's what I want everybody to know, is that OCD can absolutely take you to your lowest point, but with treatment, you can get your life back. And not only that, you learn to appreciate life more after you've stared death in the face, or at least your hardest times. You become a more compassionate, understanding, and just loving life. And so I can't pretend I'm happy all the time, but definitely excited about the work I do, but also the person I've become and the life I've created.
Well, I think that's really the important point, is that once you go through something really difficult, I mean, like mental health journeys, getting to the other side, there really is a beautiful life because you have the appreciation. You know, everything really does seem brighter. You know, I'm going to shift a little with this question, because Anna also talked about anxiety, and she talked about how her hormones triggered a mood disorder. And that actually happened with me as well. And I didn't realize that my hormones were actually causing me to go into a depression and anxiety. So can you explain how hormones and mental health are sort of tied?
Absolutely. I mostly feel compassionate for women, because there's a lot of shift with depression and anxiety sometimes around someone's period. I mean, a lot of women will say that the OCD or the anxiety or the depression is worse. There's a lot of women that really struggle through menopause, you know, as they have that huge hormonal shift. Another big one is with pregnancy. You know, we see people with postpartum, it could be depression, it could be anxiety or OCD. Also, we see a lot of people's mental health disorders come out through puberty. So we see that 13 to 18-year-old range really shift, or we can see it from that 18 to 21-year-old age shift as people are ending puberty. So hormones has a huge part to deal with these mental health disorders. So for PMDD, a lot of women can have that as well, where each month around the time of their period, it's not the same for them as it is for other people. They go into a really heightened anxiety state or depression, or they have a lot of different impacts. I've worked with clients, for instance, with anxiety or OCD or depression. They've gone their whole life okay, and then they get pregnant. And right after the child is born, their mental health completely deteriorates, and they start going into a deep depression, maybe having suicidal intrusive thoughts or harm thoughts around the child, or finding themselves so anxious or unable to get out of bed. I worked with a woman who never had children, but when she went through menopause, the OCD got to the point she couldn't function, had to quit her job. So during those period of times when people's mental health disorders first show up or potentially come out, but I find that when they're treating the hormones with, you know, a medical doctor, that can help a lot. And I usually do encourage that. If somebody notices that hormones is playing a huge part in their mental health, that is always what I first recommend, is that although ERP and medication, if somebody needs to take it, is super important, this has to be treated holistically. So we have to make sure that we're seeing a doctor that can work with that. So what I usually suggest for clients is a full medical workup to see if hormones plays a role, and there's different things that people can take. Sometimes women will get on birth control, even if they don't need it for other reasons, and that can help. Sometimes there's things with thyroid that can impact. So we just have to make sure that we're also treating that as well, if that's having an impact on mental health.
Well, that's actually what happened with me, is that I took a really bad turn during menopause. And since then, I've had to go on a hormone schedule and also take some thyroid medication. And it's been a huge change. You know, there was nothing going on in my life that would have triggered that besides the fact that I was going through menopause. So that's why it was also really confusing to me. And doctors don't really talk about this. So I'm really glad you brought up doing a full medical panel, because oftentimes it can be something physical that is going on that can cause a mood disorder.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad that you're opening up about your own story. I mean, I think this is the only way things get out there, is when individuals who have lived through it open up to the public and say, hey, this is something that's happening, because there isn't a lot of people talking about it. So I always tell people, let's treat the whole person and make sure that we're not missing any components.
Is there anything else that you would like to say about OCD or mental health?
So if you have a mental health disorder, I just hope you know that there is such a vast community out there, including this amazing podcast, of people that definitely get it. If you don't feel supported by society, we're all here to support you. And if you're somebody that doesn't have a mental health disorder and are hearing this, and maybe it's a family member, a friend, or somebody else in your life, the biggest thing that they want is not pity. They just want understanding and support. So I always say that my favorite day in the world will be one day when we know that mental health disorders are treated with the same dignity, respect, and urgency as physical health disorders. That would be the day I felt like my mission was finally met. So that's what I hope. And that's why I do this. And that's why I love stuff like what you're doing. And I'm so happy that people in the music industry have a home, you know, a place where they can feel confident about getting support and realizing that it's not something to be embarrassed by. It's something that you're doing for your own well-being and support.
A big thank you to our musical guest, Shant Sulehian and Anna Gavorkian of Satellite City, and a mental health expert, Chris Tronson. For more information on Satellite City, visit satellitecity.com and follow them on their socials, @SatelliteCity. Stay tuned for a clip of Satellite City's single Empath from their debut album Fear Tactics, which will drop on September 3rd, 2021, and join us for their album release and benefit show for mental health at the Troubadour in Los Angeles on September 4th. To buy tickets, visit troubadour.com. For more information on Chris Tronson, visit gatewayocd.com to reach the Gateway Institute in Costa Mesa, California. And follow Chris on his socials, @ChrisTronson. Follow the Check Your Head Podcast on our socials at Check Your Head Podcast, and visit checkyourheadpodcast.com to find more than 125 mental health solutions for recovery. So until next time, be brave, ask for help, and be persistent in finding the mental help that you need. I fear it's you to blame. What have you done to yourself? I see your point of view, a silhouette of suspense. There's nothing left to do but break the walls off your fence. Check Your Head Podcast is kindly supported and partnered with Sweet Relief Musicians Fund, DBSA San Gabriel Valley, Earshot Media, and Lemon Tree Studios in Los Angeles. Visit checkyourheadpodcast.com, where we have over 100 solutions for mental health. Be our friends on social media at Check Your Head Podcast. Watch us on YouTube and support us with a kind donation on checkyourheadpodcast.com. Check Your Head Podcast is sponsored by a 501c3 nonprofit, with all donations being tax deductible. Thank you for your support, and thank you for listening.